Cognitive warfare calls for an AI pause and controlling robots with thoughts. You're watching the Propaganda Report's Drive Time News Blast. I am Brad Binkley. I clicked live on Rockfin, so we should be live on Rockfin now. I don't see the red button there. Could you check that cam on your end, see if we're up and going up on Rockfin?
It says live, so I think
sweet.
So.
Well, that's all I need to know. I appreciate that. I'm joined, obviously, by host of the Mad Ones podcast, Cam Harless. Cam, I meant to tell you this, but the last time that we did a live stream, I think it was last week, maybe, with Sam Tripoli.
Before, yeah.
Well, YouTube took the video down and gave my YouTube account a strike for that one.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all.
And it had nothing. So the show was about that 6'4" biological male basketball player just packing shots, elbowing girls and grabbing breasts during that high school basketball game. And I think we must have thrown in a comment in the back and forth about the 2020 election because they said they took it down over election disinformation that was spreading.
No, I remember that. The Dominion voting machines were mentioned.
Well,
so this would be pulled just because I said that sentence.
Well, I didn't stream this one on YouTube, but it's interesting to me that it did that because I was talking to ChatGPT earlier today, or wasn't earlier today, it was yesterday, and I asked it about the 2020 election, and then it said that the 2020 election was the most litigated election ever and that wild conspiracy theory spread. And I said, wait a minute, almost all of the court cases were thrown out over procedural or lack of standing. The merits of the case weren't actually heard by the court, so there was no verdict on the merits. And then it admitted, it said, you're right, most of them were thrown out over procedural and none of the cases were evaluated on the merits of it. And then it told me that just because it's thrown out, since it was procedural, that means so it basically said that the merits of the claim could be legitimate because it was only thrown out procedural. And then I said, so you agree that they could be legitimate? And then it walked it back and said, no, they're conspiracy theories again. And then I called it a propagandist and I banged my fist against the wall and walked away.
Well, do you know what also happened since the last time I was on your show?
What's that?
Believe it or not, Jake Tapper now follows me on Twitter.
Congratulations, Jake Tapper, following Cam on Twitter. Big fan of the AI art, Cam.
Everyone is. I have almost 20, well, I've got 19,000 followers now, and most of them would absolutely hate me if they knew anything that I said on this show at any point in time.
You ought to start tagging Jake Tapper and stuff. And,
hey, Jake, what do you think of Brad Binkley's take on what you said here?
Yeah, no, not me. You just need to start. You should become buddies with him, see if you can infiltrate.
Although, I figure what I'll do. And of course, this is going on my Twitter right now, so who knows who's watching. But I think it would be pretty funny to just because I'm gathering these different corporate media people. And I feel like it'd be pretty funny to just wait until I have them all, like they're Pokemon. Got to catch them all and then just drop a crazy nuke that makes all of them block me at the same time.
Yeah. Well, what, do you have any idea what that would be?
Not yet. But I mean, it seems fun.
I'm trying to find that. ChatGTP. Oh, here's the election disinformation one. Okay. Yeah. What it said, you know what? I'll deal with that in the XR. I'll show it to you guys because I was going to tweet it later because it did. It admitted that the cases were not looked at on merit and it said that they could be valuable. Then they changed their mind on that. So the show today, as I teased, a lot of cognitive warfare stuff going on. There's been a lot of talk with all the ChatGTP and all the AI stuff. Well, I've always enjoyed looking into the latest military technology when it comes to neural brain chips and cognitive warfare. I played some clips a while back of these DARPA employees worked for the DOD also. I think they were in the Obama administration talking about how they were testing out these brain implants that would enable soldiers to communicate with their thoughts and control swarms of drones with their minds. And I noticed some stories this week with all the stuff going on with AI that caught my attention. And so I pulled some clips from, this is from the Carnegie Council their artificial intelligence and equity podcast. What is, equity doesn't even mean anything. I would love to have everybody who uses the word equity all the time put in separate rooms, unable to communicate with each other, given a piece of paper and a pen, and told, write down your concrete definition with examples of equity, and then we bring everybody out and we just compare all the BS definition, because none of them know what it is. It's just a propaganda term that has no real meaning for everybody who uses it. And this, these clowns put it in their title. But they had on their podcast, or yeah, this woman who wrote a book about cognitive warfare going on. It's a Duke professor named Nita Farahani, and they discuss, along with cognitive warfare, the battle for our brains and the intrusive technologies that could be, without us knowing it, revealing our thoughts and stealing our passwords and stuff. Like, just us sitting here thinking, somebody taking our passwords. And so I got just a couple clips here to play, and I'd love to get your thoughts on these.
For sure.
First one is, and let me know if you can hear it all right, too. The first one is, yeah, she's talking about cognitive warfare capabilities.
There was a report that was sponsored by NATO a couple of years ago that was entitled Cognitive Warfare, and they focused on the fact that the kind of sixth domain of fighting, of warfare, is warfare for the human brain, for the human mind. And that happens in a few different ways. One of them is information and propaganda warfares, and we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, we saw that with Cambridge Analytica. We've seen that with, you know, attempts to kind of shape and use platforms like social media and disinformation and propaganda campaigns to really be a battle for the brain. But the other area of that is the significant investment into brain-computer interface, or, you know, kind of brain wearables, neural interface devices, both to enhance militaries and soldiers and their capabilities, but also to try to interfere with others. So imagine a world in which you have widespread neural interface, which is the world in which I've described, I think, is coming. And people are wearing their earbuds and their headphones, and all of that's brain activity that's being tracked and also used by other countries, interfered with by other countries. And these aren't always just single directional devices. There can be bidirectional devices where you also are writing to the brain as well as reading from the brain. Also through things like, you know, you're watching TikTok, you've got your brain sensing earbuds in. Not only can I tell how you're moving through the screen, but also picking up your brain activity and your emotional reactions to the different videos you're looking at and giving you more of the same, or trying to amp you up and make you frustrated and angry. There's also worries about being able to hack information from people's brains. And the same kind of P300 that we were talking about, researchers have tried to figure out whether or not you could hack information. Like, if I'm wearing these all day while I'm doing my workplace, you know, environment, and I type my PIN number in, can you decode that from my brain activity? It seems like the answer is yes. Is there some sort of on-off device I could have to make sure that when I'm entering sensitive information, that that isn't being recorded? Or could you put into the environment on my screen subliminal probes that would probe my brain for things like my PIN number? These are all possibilities within the world of cognitive warfare. And I'm going to tell you one more, which is there's this whole domain people really worry about, which we can get into or not as you want, about weapons to target or disable the brain. And that's, I think, the scariest category of all. This is like the Havana Syndrome claims, and claims that people and countries are developing electromagnetic or other weapons to try to target and take out brains to eliminate people's even capacity for choice.
So I probably should have chopped those up into the individual things that she was saying, because that was a bit of a long clip. But we had targeting people's brains and disabling them. We had, is there some sort of, I don't know, blue light from your screen where when you're on TikTok or when you're typing in a password, they're like stealing, they're monitoring your brain waves and patterns and able to take your passcodes and stuff like that. It's wild stuff. And this guy, he did ask some good questions, but like, that little part right there, there's like a million questions. I would be like, wait a minute, stop. Give me an example of technologies that exist to do that. Well, it makes you start to wonder if all the stuff around you has capabilities like this built into it. that can, I mean, obviously that some of them do, because she's talking about it as though it's something that's already in, you know, being used, especially in businesses and corporations in China, she says, and she said some in the US are trying it too, where they're monitoring their employees' brainwaves, and they know when they're not focused, they know when they're tired, they know when they're upset, they know when they're whatever. And in China, maybe here too, she only said China though, that employees are being punished because of lack of focus as determined by their brainwave scans.
Well, I'll ask you a question, see if you know this. Who is the person who has been most publicly working on brain interfaces with computers?
Most publicly working on them. I know that Obama had a brain initiative years ago.
Well, someone who could actually make it happen.
You're talking about Elon Musk. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny is I tweeted yesterday or today, I can't remember which, but Elon on Twitter at this point, you know, I typically don't go to the, like, my follower, people I follow side of Twitter. I just scroll whatever's the For You part of Twitter. And usually it's been good. For years it's been good. It's been a mixture of things that people that I follow like or tweet or retweet. It's all connected to who I've decided to follow. Up until just recently, where I noticed I'm getting all of these different people who suck. And it's not just because I have a bunch more followers. It's because I've asked several people, and they're like, yeah, my For You is something you should, I do not scroll anymore because it sucks.
And it's I've noticed too. It's not as good as it was.
Yeah. Almost every single thing, every time I scrolled, I think it has gotten better in the last couple of days because they reversed some of it. Looked like Elon even mentioned reversing some of it. But it was like they were picking out things that they thought would infuriate me enough to rage about online or share and rage about and make fun of someone. Like, it was like they were baiting me. And so when she's talking about this Neuralink, that when you're scrolling TikTok, it'll tell if you're mad or frustrated or happy or whatever, and they'll kind of make the algorithm good enough to play into that emotion so that you're freaking out or outraged or whatever. I'm going, the guy who wants to make these chips and put them into pig brains and is already testing them on pigs is doing this on Twitter right now. Very clearly already trying it on Twitter.
He's using Twitter as kind of an experimental ground on it. It sounds like, yeah.
Yeah,
you're right. Elon Musk, today it was in the news, along with the other stuff, that his Neuralink company, they're seeking a medical partner to start conducting trials with the brain chip because they want to have it out by 2023. So if you're interested in being in a clinical trial, follow the Neuralink thing and see who they partner with.
2024.
Or 2024, excuse me. I'm still not even believing it's 2023 yet. It's still 2019 to me.
We're going to get a brain link that will, you know, change everyone but our lives because we're the only ones who don't have it before we get Red Dead Redemption 3. And I'm not happy about that.
Red Dead Redemption 3 is going to come out when we're 95 years old. Is when that
and
game is
I will
out.
Be. I will be an
I'll,
old.
I'll
man
play it all night too. Cornelius Wolfshirt said in the comments that PIN numbers will be archaic by then. And this woman actually comments on that, different ways of authenticating when you're logging in. But I played some clips yesterday on the show from, I think it's Sam Altman might be his name, the guy who is the OpenAI guy, the guy they've been parading around, who's the new face of, he's like the new Zuckerberg, and they call him the father of ChatGPT. He's a very weird guy. But one of the companies that he started in 2020, another company that he started, is called WorldCoin. And all that WorldCoin is, as far as I can tell, is it offers people free WorldCoin crypto or something. I don't know what it's worth. And you go to the site and you get the free crypto by scanning your iris. And then you can't. So the whole idea is that you can only get it one time. And the way they're sure to make the authentication is accurate is they use your eyeball and you just get one. So he is trying to develop iris scans as authenticating for ways to get into things. And we're going to, and this Demolition Man,
Not today, Satan.
Yeah. All right. So the next one, she kind of answers the question of, are corporations and governments reading our minds with this technology that's available? I mean, unless if it's available and you can actually do it, they're going to do it as much as they are able to.
Here's the deal, though. Can I just, before we do this, they don't have to. They don't have to have this to read their mind. A couple of years ago, I knew a friend of mine, this was, I guess, 10 years ago. His little sister got pregnant at 16 years old. No one knew this. No one at all knew that she was pregnant. Her mom and dad didn't know, nothing. One day, she's sitting at home, and an ad from Target comes in with her name on it in the mail, and it's covered in diapers. And it's like, go ahead and register for your baby shower, all of that stuff. And why? Because when she was searching their website or going into their store or whatever, I'm pretty sure it was the website or just different searches that she did, they had scrubbed enough information from her search history to know that she was pregnant.
Wow. She was outed by the algorithm. That's wild.
And so regardless of what we're talking about in the future, they don't need it now.
Well, she actually talks about that. It is the definition of reading people's minds. And it's not like the science fiction-y thing that we think about. It is more like what you're talking about. They don't need to read our minds the way we might think about it in movies, because everybody is putting enough personal information about them on all these social media platforms for them to decipher the patterns without doing that.
I'm saying.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Real world mind reading is not happening of these devices in that way. But that doesn't mean there isn't a lot of information that you can decode from the brain. You call it crude, or some people call it crude, but we couldn't before pick up engagement, boredom, frustration, mind wandering, attention, fatigue levels, simple numbers, shapes, even faces that you're seeing in your brain. This is a form of mind reading. It's just not the full resolution of everything in your brain. And the question is that information dangerous or risky? Is it different than what I can pick up? Sometimes, right now, the algorithm and your surfing on TikTok may tell me more about what's going on in your mind than one of these brain sensing headbuds would, right? Or brain sensing earbuds would. But
brain sensing earbuds, did you know that? I mean, I've never thought about a brain sensing ear, but it makes sense that one would exist.
Well, that's what's funny is because, like, when she says that, my brain is going, my response is, why does it sound like she's that guy who was trying to, like, understand how they could use a steam engine to make a car, or, you know, something like, oh, how can we make gaslight? You know, it sounds like a different category. I don't think it's going to be earbuds. I think it's going to be something completely separate.
Yeah. Well, the earbuds, I'm guessing, are, I'm not certain, but I'm guessing that they probably pitch them on a health angle. Like the Apple Watches can monitor your bio data. It's probably something like that they pitch it on, if I had to guess. And that's how they get a lot of this stuff in, is they give the here's how it's going to make your life better angle. Some of the stuff does actually help you, but then you see these military people going, yeah, we had this healthcare product, and then we decided to weaponize the hell out of it, and now we're controlling drones with our minds.
If you combine them, which is what the reality is,
me too.
Right? We're not talking about brain activity in isolation. We're talking about one piece of the missing puzzle that corporations and governments have about people, which is the unexpressed emotions, the unexpressed inner feelings, biases, uncommunicated and unexpressed through swipes or movements or anything else. You think you have a poker face? It turns out your poker face can be decoded through your emotions that are revealed through brain activity. And so there is some form of mind reading that is...
That's going to be very difficult for poker players in the future when everybody has the AI digital glasses reading each other's poker faces. It's going to end the world of poker.
Well, then they'll just put on their COVID mask and it'll be fine.
Right. Because that stops it. So you got to do. Yeah.
Does, will they get more precise over time? Will we get even more resolution and more information over time? Absolutely. But right now, today, can they tell your complex thoughts? No. And I don't think they ever will from one little sensor in each ear.
So she seemed to be focused in on those earpieces, which, you know, yeah. I guess it's not inside your brain, but, you know, you're pushing it in there inside your head. I don't have the Apple earbuds. I don't know if those are the most advanced or not, but they have all kinds of technologies where they're trying to track that bio data, but you're exactly right. And she alluded to that, your TikTok pattern, stuff like that, which you click on, that's going to give them enough data to understand patterns.
And that's the thing, is like, they've been doing this for years. It's just going to become more successful because every time you scroll the internet, you like, and people freak out like, oh, you know, I was just talking about blah, 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 and it showed up in my ads. Like, I'll tell you, TikTok, their algorithm is incredible when it comes to this stuff. Sometimes it's off, sometimes it misses, but like, I'll scroll TikTok and it'll be like, hey, are you having trouble paying attention? Do you need ADHD medicine? And I'm like, yeah.
TikTok's probably subscribing Adderall to people now. Is this what's going on?
You don't need Vyvanse. Go on this website and buy $80 worth of nootropics. Or, yeah. Or I won't do that. I'll just suffer in silence.
Yeah, they sell nootropics. They sound like an American radio person or podcaster. And, you know, they're China, so... the TikTok battle going on right now. I felt like it was kind of leaking into what she's been saying in this thing, where she felt like she had to isolate TikTok when it comes to those algorithms. And I'm sure their algorithm is great, but also I'm sure the algorithms on Instagram stories and all that other stuff, which is not quite as good, but also is gathering people's data and whatnot. Well, and I know that they're being weaponized by both governments. It's just a matter of who you're comfortable having your data weaponized by.
So like, TikTok is like, hey, let me try to diagnose you with ADHD. And Instagram is like, hey, I think you like girls with tattoos. And I'm like, you're both right, but at different levels.
We're going to prescribe you with Vyvanse and a female with multiple tattoos.
Lots of stuff right there.
What's your shipping? What's your package number?
We already know your address. Don't worry about it.
All right. Next, he goes back to that idea. The moderator, he asked her to go back and talk about PIN numbers being decoded from our brains again, you know, looking at our screens. And she kind of elaborates on some of the stuff that's available to do that. By the way, this AI image on screen, which is a brain exploding and all kind of stuff in it, I just typed in cognitive warfare into Midjourney, and that's what it came up with.
You're passively having your brain activity monitored while you're doing things like entering your PIN numbers into your bank account on the screen of your computer. And that has neural representation, and that neural representation can be potentially decoded and recorded. So it could be intercepted by intercepting your brain activity while you are entering in the information on the screen. So it comes up as little black circles on your screen. It doesn't come up as little black circles in your brain, right? It's the actual numbers that you intend to be typing in your brain. And in the same way that we can already, with some devices enable you to type on a virtual keyboard, that's because you can decode your intention to type 2, 7, 1, 4, right? And figure out what that is and decode it. The second is an experiment that was done a number of years ago now, which sought to use recognition memory and subliminal priming within a gaming environment. So gamers who wore these neural interface headsets, who knew that they were part of a research subject, so this wasn't literally stealing information from their brains, but it was, they didn't know that the priming was happening. They just knew that they were part of a research experiment. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to see whether or not they could act.
They were probably told they were part of a research experiment to test out this new game. They do that. They just make it completely different.
Ghostbusters. I think it's the first one, the first scene. Have you seen Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first scene, you remember Dr. Venkman, Bill Murray's character, is sitting in front of a very pretty girl, college student, and a guy, college student. And he's like holding up cards, and it's like a star on one side, and she can't see what it is. Neither can the guy. And he'll lift it up, and she'll say the wrong thing, and he'll be like, correct. And then he'll hold up another one, and the guy will say the right thing, and he shocks him.
Yeah, right.
And so it's just that. It's just the first few minutes of Ghostbusters, and that's just lovely.
Oh, wait.
Accurately flash numbers and, you know, figure out through the subliminal primes what the PIN number and what the address, the mailing address, was for the recipient. And they were able to do that with a high degree of accuracy.
Yeah, you know, that's a study I'm going to need to go investigate a little deeper, because I feel like she's left a little details out about how the subliminal primes were able to compel the address and the PIN number from the mind of the user. She didn't kind of connect A, B, and C there. But what I'm curious about is, what about our unconscious minds, the things that are really driving people that most people have no idea what's going on in their unconscious minds? If they're decoding what people are thinking, what people think and what people do are often polar opposites. So I know Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of, I don't know him personally, but Freud's nephew, that's what they would play off of, is that they appealed to the unconscious mind. The people, they knew that when you surveyed people and people would tell you what they wanted, that oftentimes that wasn't really what they wanted. So they would use these emotional appeals to base level, get people non-thinking in groups and acting compelled by tribal, divide and conquer strategies. And I don't know why they're trying to read the surface. I feel like they should all be focused on just reading everybody's unconscious mind.
I think that probably, like, just thinking about it right now, I haven't read Bernays or Freud, but when I think about how you'll think something and do something else, I have to wonder how much of that is self-talk, as in rather than truth. So a lot of times, like, I'll be feeling something and I'll be thinking of something else, trying to talk myself out of this, that, or the other, right? I want to do this, but I wonder if just the very base of your emotional nature, which I think is a good thing, it's a in my opinion a God-given thing, is what it's reading. And I think what happens in the human brain, this is my opinion, is that you have a feeling, and then you immediately try to decipher what that feeling is. And so what's true to the way you're feeling is just that immediate emotion. And then you talk to yourself to figure out what it is, or to talk yourself out of what you know it is. Does that make sense?
I blindly act and apologize later, and then I think about it afterwards. Is what I typically.
Right. So I think there's a two-step process to this. So if you're reading those immediate responses that are in the brain, then what you're going to get, I think, is going to be more true to how you act than what you're actually thinking.
Yeah. So if you do a little psychoanalysis on yourself, which not a lot of people do. I think if we do it, so you're just talking about, stopping and pausing. There's an improv exercise to, a lot of times people have scripts in their minds when they go into an improv scene, and it'll ruin the scene, but you just want to react in the moment. So the exercise is, one partner says a line, then the other person on stage, they repeat the line back, and then they reply. So that way they have to process it. So that to me is kind of like, okay, so I'm thinking about what was said, processing it. Now I'm acting more through an understanding than just regurgitating the first thing that came to mind. Also, though, the unconscious mind, those motivators, those are not so easy to dig into unless we are truly reflecting upon ourselves all the time and drawing out the things that lie beneath, which quite often I think a lot of people live their lives not wanting to do that, because it's very scary to have to face a lot of those things that live down there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, like, I feel like subconscious or unconscious, I don't feel like these words adequately describe what we're talking about, which is just I think it's truly emotional impulse. And then from there, we try to decipher what it is. But I feel like it's not unconscious. I don't feel like it's subconscious. I think it's, well, I mean, I guess subconscious would make more sense. But I think it's an immediate physical reaction to an emotion. I don't know. Not that this is even an important conversation necessarily, but I feel like
drives the world. It does. It's
yeah.
It's good. The idea of reflection that you talked about a moment ago. We convince ourselves that we're more logical and reasonable than we are emotional. But it's such a joke. It's not even effing close, man. The most reasonable, logical person on the planet, their logic and reason, it just pales in comparison to the emotions that actually drive their behavior. Our logic and reason can do what you're talking about and stop us and make us think it through and direct our emotions in a more productive way. But to think that the people I know that think they're just the most logical, reasonable people on the planet are the most compulsive jackasses I've ever met in my life.
Well, and that's why I mentioned self-talk, because a lot of this, it, like, people believe that they're doing the right thing, that they're good people, that they're some of the best people on the planet. I mean, I think there are two types of people. There are people like them who kind of justify anything that they do. Like I had a friend whose mother, who, this is the wildest thing. So my friend, her sister was married to a man, had a baby with that man. They broke up. And then the mom dated her sister. So
wait,
no.
So, I said that wrong. Excuse me. Say that again.
It's so Jerry Springer. It's hard to get right.
I love Jerry Springer.
So there's a mom and two girls. This man, let's call him Dave, was dating Dave. A girl named Jennifer.
Dave, okay? And Jennifer.
Right. And Jennifer has a mom and a sister named Dolores.
All right.
Right.
Dolores.
And I know Dolores.
All right.
So Dave and Jennifer are dating. They have a baby. They split up. Jennifer's mom starts dating Dave and then says to her daughter, but Jennifer, it's my time to be happy. I deserve this.
Yeah.
Because human beings can justify anything. They can say, but if I'm happy, I'm a good person. I deserve this. It's my time. Like, you just look at humanity and you see two types of people. Those who say, I don't deserve anything, and those who think they deserve everything. And I think it's narcissism. I don't know what it comes from, but that's what I've found, is there are people out there who will justify any horrible behavior because the world owes it to them. That's where nice guys come in.
I thought you were going to say, and those who date their daughter's baby daddy.
Right. What a Jerry Springer thing to do.
How much age difference is there?
That's the thing. The daughter was dating a guy who was probably 10, 15 years older than her.
Daddy issues.
He was in between her mom and her.
Yeah. So was their dad around?
No.
Okay. So the mom is probably, I see. So, do you know about Elon Musk's dad, right?
I don't know much. Well, I do want to bring this up. Denver said, I don't think it's as much about reading people's minds as it is influencing, guiding people's minds.
Yeah.
Which I think is true, because I think it functions on the subconscious emotional level rather than the conscious mind level.
Right. So they do talk about it a lot as, you know, giving people what they want and whatnot, but it is clear in the way that they talk about, especially with a ChatGTP guy that I was listening to clips of yesterday. It's clear that they're shaping where people are going and then saying that they're just following where people are going. I agree with that. So Musk's dad, and I'm going to get some of the details of this wrong, but he's got a whole bunch of children, just like Elon. And
He
divorced his wife, Elon's mom, got remarried, and he married someone who had a kid. And the kid was 4 years old. It was a daughter. So it's Elon's stepsister, 4 years old. So Elon grew up. Elon was young. So that's like his sister. When you're a kid and you grow up with, you know, he probably feels like his sister, like biological sister. And then a few years back, he divorces the mom and the kid, who's like, but now in her late 20s or 30s or something, you know, maybe mid-30s, he starts hooking up with her. He's had two kids with her now. So he's had two kids with his former stepdaughter and Elon's former stepsister. And they had a falling out because of that.
That sounds like some real Woody Allen stuff.
Yeah. I've been to the Jerry Springer show before. And
have you?
Yes, I have. I have. And I'm on video too of the, I went to the show and there was a guy when we were waiting in line, the whole time we're waiting in line, he's just so really excited to be there. And so you could tell that everything he'd ever seen on TV about Jerry Springer, he was like, I know what I'm going to say. I know who I'm going to call a whore. And I have my insults ready, because they were just oozing from him in the line to get in. And I told my friend, this was years ago, I said, that's the guy who is going to get pulled up on stage because he does something stupid. Like I pointed him out, and then we go sit down in the theater. They sit this guy next to me. Okay. He's a little like 5'4" guy. He's a little guy, and show kicks off. And it was obviously people go in there, actors go in there, and they want to be on TV. And I think that's a lot what was going on here, but he just starts screaming, whore, 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 raising. Eventually he was so loud, they brought the mic over to him. He called the person a whore and did something because there was a stripper involved. And then of course the lights go down because it's a big stage production. It's hilarious. And then like stripper music comes on and there's like strobe lights and the stage managers are saying, get on the stage. Everybody starts chanting, get on the stage. This little guy gets up, a pole comes down from the ceiling, and he goes up in stripper-like lighting now and starts, takes his clothes off and starts swinging around a pole and dancing, living out his dream of being pulled onto stage at Jerry Springer. And then he comes back to sit directly next to me with his ass still hanging out, okay? And like 6 months later, I happen to turn on Jerry Springer, and the first thing I see is that guy walking up into like the fourth aisle where I'm sitting, and him coming to sit down with his butt out and me just like trying to scoot over as far as possible. My face is bright red. And the best part about it is on the way out, he's on the phone going, yeah, honey. No, I went up on stage. And so he's talking to his wife and I'm like, this guy's married?
Sounds about right.
All right, so I got one more from her, and then a couple more things we'll talk about. We won't keep you guys too long tonight. Mm-hmm. This one is kind of along that same line of thinking here. Just kind of clarifies the ways our brains are vulnerable that we really don't think about it.
There are cybersecurity and biosecurity risks of decoding information from the brain, whether that's by probing to obtain information from the brain, or the sensitive information that you may be conveying that you think you're doing so in secret, mm-hmm. That can be picked up and decoded from brain activity that you are intentionally communicating and typing. One stored in your brain, one expressed through typing. So, you know, I think, you know, to your point, am I literally like rifling through your brain, Wendell, to find your PIN number with brain activity? No, right?
Right.
The question is, can you use access to brain activity to get at information stored in the brain? And that's different, and importantly different, from your full, robust thoughts. It's not like you're sitting there and daydreaming and I'm decoding everything that you're thinking about. But the idea that everything in your brain is safe and that it's just general states of mind that can be decoded is also wrong, because you can probe the brain for specific pieces of information and even decode specific pieces of information as a person is thinking about it. So there's a gulf, there's a gap between mind reading as the ordinary person thinks about it, as being able to decode the complex thoughts and images in your mind. But it's also much more advanced than people think, in that it is not just some general sense that I'm getting from your brain. I can actually get some, and not me, right? Researchers and scientists and people who sell the technology, they can decode information from brain activity with increasing precision.
Well, of course they can.
Yeah.
Do you know what social engineering is?
Yes.
So that's all you have to do is apply social engineering to this particular type of technology. Because
right.
All you do is put the certain stressors on certain things, and then you read the response, the chemical, electrical responses in the brain.
Yeah, and I have another story that actually it reads the brain waves and creates patterns from that. I think the moral of the story, they combine everything, which that's always never going to be just one thing, never just one mind reading trick that they're doing. It's a combination of the data that's available with the brainwave patterns and all the stuff and the sensors and whatnot that they can use. But I think the moral overall is one of the best protections we can use is, well, it's a tinfoil hat. It's time to actually put the tinfoil hat on. As yep. studies have shown that it can block out some sort of waves. So
get a Magneto helmet.
Right. So with that said, I think this is a story. So AI, okay, here it is. There's a group at what's called the National University of Singapore, and Stanford University was working with them on this. And it's a team of researchers that they have shown that they can decode human brain scans to tell what a person is picturing in their mind. And they just published this paper a couple of months ago. And the way that they did this is they used brain scans of the participants as they looked at more than so the participants looked at thousands of pictures, like a fire truck, a gray building, a giraffe eating leaves, stuff like that. And they, while they were inside of a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, an MRI, which recorded the resulting brain signals over time. And the researchers then sent those signals through an AI model to train it to associate certain brain patterns with certain images. And then they later, when the subjects were shown the new images from the MRI, the system detected the patient's brain waves, and then they generated a shorthand description of what it thinks those brain waves corresponded to, and then it used the AI image generator to produce a best guess image of what the what the participant saw. That's a mouthful there, but it's an elaborate technique they're using to take a picture of the brain, train it. So basically the MRI used to train the brain initially, and then they bring the patients back in after they've sent the data to the AI, and then they have the AI be the one that analyzes the brain along with the MRI, it sounds like. And they say the results here were like one patient, it says in a stone tower, was shown to a study participant, generated images of the tower once it was shown. So they showed them a tower, and then the person's brain waves generated images with a window situated at unreal angles or something like that. A bear that was shown became a strange shaggy dog that the AI predicted. I'm not explaining this well because I don't quite have my head wrapped around how they did it, but they say that the resulting generated image, that they match the attributes, the color, shape, and the semantic meaning of the original image 84% of the time. So I think that they're saying that the AI was 84% accurate in its ability to detect what the brain waves were showing through the MRI system.
Yeah. Yeah, so essentially kind of how it would work is they would essentially train the you show a picture of a bear 200 times to someone, your brain it responds in a very specific way,
right?
So you just get these snapshots, and then the snapshots have a certain level of uniformity. You feed these in and the AI tries to draw using that, which
right.
makes perfect sense to me.
It really does, if you put it that way. Yeah.
I mean, it's it's all about finding the patterns. And Denver said, what if someone has the opposite of a photographic mind? The catch with tech like this is it assumes uniformity in brain function, which isn't the case in reality, which is apparently true because, some people don't have inner monologues. They don't.
What?
When they think, they don't hear.
It's empty in there?
Like when you think, do you hear like your voice when you're thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I used to hear Mick Jagger, but now I hear me. Yeah.
But some people apparently just see like images, or not even pure images, but
really
like feelings.
Colors, they think in pictures only?
Essentially. Like they don't think in words. And so that's something that I've heard of.
Well, that makes sense because we weren't born with words,
Right. Well, and then there are other people who, like, if I told you to picture an apple in your head right now, most likely you can picture an apple in your head.
I'm picturing a woman's backside.
See, the peach. I didn't say peach. I said apple. But You know, you can do that. There are some people who are completely incapable of conjuring an image in their head.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And so, like, he's right. These, it's, you can only pattern match with specific types of brains. Or, you know, you have to do a multi-zonal approach, or maybe just the way the brain works is the same. It's just certain levels of cognition that are different.
Right. It's different. We're not, you know, we are amateur brain surgeons here and neuroscientists, amateur neuroscientists. But a thought is a physical thing. And that's something you learn about. I've read a lot of books on neuroscience, especially there's one that is called Thinking Fast and Slow. That is a recommended read for CIA agents, which talks about system one, system two thinking, with the system one thinking being your almost like, I think Cornelius Wolfshirt mentioned this earlier, instinct being, you know, the automatic patterns. It's not pure instinct, system one, that's how you react, but it's the patterns of behavior that we've become so accustomed to and habitual that we don't think about anymore. We use no cognitive resources because we've already created those nodes. And that created like a system two thinking, we have limited resources in creating those new nodes in our brain because it's more difficult, and it's actually a physical thing that's created, that node. And you have to continue to do that thing or think that thing and make it stronger until it eventually becomes a system one behavior once it's become habitual and thoughtless. But the thing that always stuck with me about that is that thoughts are literally physical things in the brain in the form of these nodes that are created. And it sounds to me like some of this imaging that they're scanning has to do with just analyzing these thoughts, these physical things going on in people's minds.
Yeah, that's a conversation I've had about brain plasticity and, you know, kind of neural pathways that I've had on. I've talked about with different subjects, which I won't delve into one of those here. But I always like to think of it as, you know, you're walking down a path, and the first time you walk down that path, you have to use a machete to clear the path. And then the next time you may have to use the machete because it's grown back. But over time, it becomes one of those natural paths that everyone walks down.
Right. Yeah.
So there is definitely a physical component that is going on to it, which I think explains a lot of different behaviors in our current landscape. I think that we prime ourselves and condition ourselves, and other people condition us before we have a chance to think through what's actually going on.
Right. And that's the whole idea, is to intercept people before they can come to their own conclusions about things. I mean, that is what the purpose of the media is right now. They don't want anybody thinking or analyzing anything. That's why anytime somebody disagrees with a mainstream narrative, there's a whole coordinated campaign starting with a president to assign them as a MAGA Republican. Doesn't matter, they could be the most far left person on the planet. If they disagree with a narrative, like the other day, it was Ben and Jerry's, who is just a huge progressive company, and they have been very controversial for their political stances, like very progressive leaning political stances. The other day, people learned that they don't support sending weapons to Ukraine. And all of a sudden, all the people who they aligned with for so many years turned against them and called to ban them. And they try and shape things and tell people what to believe before they can form those nodes themselves. So a comment here,
Sobogus.
Yeah, I just scanned through your comment there about the electrical activity in the brain. It's interesting to me. I don't quite understand it at this moment. But it is definitely this whole idea of the brain scans and what people can and cannot determine. Right.
Getting at earlier.
Yeah.
Regardless of the way that people actually think and conjure thoughts, it's still going to fire the same things in the electrical impulses within the brain. So the AI or the MRI being able to read those should be the same or act in a very similar manner, regardless of who it is.
Yeah. And all of this, and this isn't directly like the Obama's brain initiative, but it is still this concept of trying to solve the brain completely, which they have been unable to do forever. Like Obama had this brain initiative, I think 2013 is when it launched, with the goal of mapping every neuron in the brain. Some of you guys have probably seen the video where they did that with a worm, which doesn't have many neurons. You know, worms are stupid. Worms can't pass the law exam. They're dumb. And so they took the neurons of the brain, and then they transferred the worm's brain, the neurons, onto a little robot. And then there's video of the robot just slamming into the wall over and over again, because it's trying to crawl up the wall because it's got the neurons of the worm brain operating it. At least that's the claim anyway. And the idea that they're trying to do the same thing with a human brain to try to basically turn people into remote control subjects, I don't think they'll ever be able to do it. Nobody has solved the brain yet. I don't think they're ever going to solve the brain.
Well, one of the things that Sobogus said as well, which I almost broke in and said as well, we're on the same brainwave right now. He said, huge assumption that a thought is a physical thing or memories. There is physical activity in the brain. When people think, that is different from a thought being a thing, an object. Because this is a conversation that's a very metaphysical, philosophical one that's been going on for probably centuries. But yeah, there is definitely brain plasticity. There's definitely neural pathways that are formed and habits that are very physically centered. But, you know, like as soon as you said, a thought is a physical thing, I was kind of like, is it?
Because it is.
I think that what we're looking at is the evidence of a thought affecting the brain rather than the brain affecting a thought.
That's why words are painful, Cam, is because thoughts are physical things. So you're actually throwing physical objects at people.
Hey, man. Silence is violence, and so are words. So
right, and silence is violence also. Well, the creation of those nodes that connect in your brain is the argument of them being physical things when they open up people's brains and they look at the brain.
I think there's definitely effects that I will absolutely concede to, but what I will say is I do think that science tries to take it too far and make absolute statements out of things that we do not understand. Like thoughts, I don't think we fully understand those at
all. Look, wait, you would have me believe that the science sometimes states things as absolute truths that it hasn't fully proven yet?
No, there's a consensus here, Brad. Obviously, if there's more than three people that agree, it's absolutely correct.
Do you question Dr. Fauci? You're someone who probably questions Dr. Fauci.
How dare you?
Yeah. Thank you, Greta. So there's pain and learning.
One more person tags me in that stupid picture.
You look like that picture. I love it.
Gender swap. Greta Thunberg. I'm gonna go insane.
No, dude, an MRI scan that was doing my brain right now and feeding it to an AI would produce an image of me thinking about that image right now because that's exactly what I was thinking about. The stuff that we know, like the things that we learn, they're different. So take a video game or take like karate or something. It's hard when you first do it and you feel like you'll never be able to learn. It's like, oh, I suck at this. But 2 weeks later, after you've been doing it a little bit, it's like, oh, man, I sucked at this, you know, a couple weeks ago. Now I'm awesome at not necessarily karate, but a video game, which you learn it. And it's that. So the pain of cognitive dissonance of having to change something, your previous worldview, and learn something new. Aristotle talks about this, the physical pain that comes from having to learn something new and not just doing the things we've always done because the nodes are strong enough in all those and we don't have to think about it. We have to build up the brain nodes and the things we do not know yet. And at first, it is painful. It sucks. Like changing anything is painful, even though we know we have to change. And that's why a lot of people don't do it. They revert to the old habits because it's a way to avoid that, you know, call it emotional, call it physical, whatever you want, call it one and the same. It's a way to avoid that. And, you know, I don't even know where I was going with that, but I just want, armchair neurosciences.
It's very interesting, but it's just one of those, the only reason I mentioned that and brought up that comment is because there's a certain level of certainty that people speak of when they talk about certain things with the brain and they haven't.
Yep.
I swear to God, Siri, I'm going to kill you. But
ChatGPT is best friends with Siri, dude.
But
they'll mess around.
The amount of things that they say that are just, they say it with such certainty when it's like, we cannot.
Right.
That.
Totally. Yeah, you're right.
A cause of frustration and argumentation for millennia.
Absolutely. And a lot of times they're stating these positions to position themselves as an expert in the field, even though they know that they don't have the 100% evidence on that. I completely agree with you there. Let me give you one more story and then we'll go to the XR and we'll do some other stuff. And that last story that I'll do.
Sexy stuff?
Yeah, maybe some sexy stuff. Well, I don't know. Live stream, we got some video, maybe it'll get a little sexy. Who knows? But what we'll do in that last story is I'm going to give you, I'll save one of these stories for the XR, which is another steering a robot with your thoughts. And then what we'll do for the last story is a more positive story about a brain implant that helped someone, which that's always the balance. You know, you have the appeal of how it helps versus the way it could be weaponized. So we'll talk about that story. And in the XR, what we'll do is we'll talk about the controlling robots with thoughts that I teased earlier. And what I'll do is I will show you the chat, how I got ChatGPT to admit some things about the Guatemala syphilis experiment and Johns Hopkins University that I was a little surprised that it admitted. Now, it did qualify itself, but it made some pretty striking admissions. I'll show you what those are in the XR. And to get access to that, that's the subscriber-only content. Go to patreon.com/propagandareport, propreport.locals.com, rockfin.com/propagandareport, and you will get access to the subscriber-only content as well as the DMB ad-free. I take out all the ads for subscribers. So, propagandafight.com is the website. At Freedom Act Radio is Twitter. Cam, you have a lot of followers now. Do you want to tell people your Twitter account, or do you have too many followers at this point?
I have too many, but that's fine. I'll take
Jake.
Some more.
Jake Tapper's following you now.
Yeah, we're mutuals. I could. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I think in the XR, so I can say the bad words that I want to say.
All right,
but I am on Twitter at Ham Carlos. I have a show called The Mad Ones. That's typically every Thursday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We won't have one this week, but we will have one next week where I'm going to be speaking with Michael Jones from Inspiring Philosophy about how Easter is evil and pagan. It's not. We're going to be debunking that.
I've always hated next Easter week. Bunny. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, Cam does a lot of fantastic, deep, insightful interviews with people, and I hope you become besties with Jake Tapper. That would make my day. You'd probably hate me if that happened, though, because he turned you against me.
You can. I'm just going to use him for cash.
Yeah, you know he's a sugar daddy.
By NATO a couple of years ago. All right, let me get this entitled Cognitive Warfare. And
hold on, I had something. A random video just started playing, and I couldn't figure out what. Has that ever happened to you? You're moving something around on the desktop, and then some video is playing, and you can't figure out where it is to stop it.
It has.
All right, so I'm going to put this up on screen here. This is an article about a paralyzed man who he had a brain implant. This was a couple days ago that the story came out. And he is now able to do things like control his hands again using his thoughts. And I believe he's able to hold his neck up as well, if I remember reading the story correctly. But I'm going to let this video tell us. Here we go. It's at the beginning. You can hear that,
it's
right?
It's not unusual for a college age.
Yep.
All right. What happened there? I can no longer hear it. Can you still hear it?
I'm playing now.
Huh. All right. All right. Hold on 1 second. I don't know why that. What happened there? Let's try that again. That way.
It's not unusual for a college-age student to spend hours playing a guitar video game, but the fact that Ian Burkhart is doing it is nothing short of incredible. Paralyzed from the neck down in a diving accident in 2010, Ian couldn't move a finger.
Now it's just something that's so fluid. It's just kind of like it was before I had my injury, where I just think about what I want to do, and now I can do it.
Ian made international headlines in 2014, becoming the first paralyzed patient to move his hand using his own thoughts. That day, he simply picked up a spoon. Today, he's not only playing video games, but pouring objects from a cup and swiping credit cards, all with the aid of this sleeve, a computer chip, and a movement algorithm developed by Battelle that Ian controls with his brain.
Several years after the spinal cord injury, his level of functioning has improved significantly, so he's able to have more use of his fingers and hands to do functional tasks, which has not been demonstrated before.
In 2014, neurosurgeon Ali Rezai implanted a computer chip in Ian's brain at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. That chip is connected to wires that come from Ian's head and are hooked to this sleeve to create a neural bypass. For more than a year, Ian has made dozens of trips back to Ohio State for therapy with a team of physicians and Battelle engineers. Each time, computers read his thoughts, decode them, and send messages to the sleeve to move his muscles. The results of Ian's remarkable progress are detailed in a new study in the journal Nature. And though it may sound like science fiction, the more Ian and the computer work together, the more they learn to listen to each other, taking even researchers by surprise.
This is possible. You can take someone, a human being who is paralyzed, and give them the ability to use that paralyzed limb again in a functional way.
Researchers hope this technology can be used to help a range of patients in the future, including stroke victims.
It is often very difficult for patients to regain movement in the hand and arm area. So this technology will help speed that recovery and make that rehabilitation much more effective.
And Ian is optimistic his efforts will lead to medical advances that change lives forever.
I have a lot more hope for the future now. I always knew maybe someday something would happen, but now I know for sure that something actually is happening.
At Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, this is Clark Powell reporting.
Don't like that at all.
It's not unusual.
Did not like watching that at all. That made me deeply uncomfortable for some reason.
That's a tough thing. Like people who are quadriplegic or who don't have the ability to use their arms and limbs, it's when you hear technology like this that can help them, then you're at least I'm happy for them. Because it's, you know, I can't imagine being in that situation like they are. But you do also worry about ways that it can be weaponized. But this same type of technology is what the military was using that I'm going to talk about in the XR, where they're controlling robots with their thoughts. But I, you know, if they're going to have this technology anyway, and they will, then at least use it to help people like this. So I'm happy that they're helping him. I know this guy has been somebody they focused on for the past 8 years. I'm curious as to why or how he got specific focus by the news, because there's lots of people who are in these experimental programs. When my mom had a rare disease and she was unable to use her, she wasn't a quadriplegic technically because she had a different type of disease, but she could not walk. She could use her limbs some. She couldn't control her limbs. I would research stuff like this all the time. I would look for clinical trials to see if they were doing something that could help in this way. And so I've known about this guy for probably since the first time that he came out there. It just sucks that technology like this can exist and be helpful, but that you have to also, in the back of your mind, say, yeah, but how's somebody going to use it for bad? How's somebody going to weaponize it? And that's what I don't like about it. I'm happy that it helped him, and I hope it does help others in the future. But you know, it makes me worry, though. In the back of my head, I'm always like, that's great, it's awesome, but there's someone who can turn the thing off at any point in time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what, I think probably they chose him because he's the most able to speak or something like that, or the most palatable to put on TV. Cause you know, that's probably where how they make their decisions.
You're right. A lot of people who have, or like that, they have a hard time talking. They're, I think I read where might've been, I think it was this guy where he's only able to hold up his head when he's, using the technology, which a lot of people, they have to have a head strap holding their heads up. That's one of the difficulties in getting treatment, because their spine can develop some, I don't remember the name of it, but it caused a lot of problems with that. But the video game thing, I can picture his mom saying, all these years, you haven't been, and you're just playing video games again. You know, it's all.
Get a job.
yeah. We got you all this nice technology. Now get out of the house, do something. All right, so that's what I got for the show today. I'm happy for that guy. I hope, you know, in an ideal world, technology like that will be used for good. And let's pray that it is used for good.
For real.
For sure. Cam, you any parting words?
I'll just say that I am currently working on a president's set that's just for the anarchists out there.
Oh, like what? Really, anarchists, presidents, if they were anarchists.
No, no, no. It's for people who are anarchists. It's for people who hate the presidents. I'm working on that now. It will be my least popular one yet.
What is it like? President's crate? Yeah, just presidents inside like a dog, like a tiny dog crate. You know, you picture a kennel. You know how you go into a kennel and they have all the dog crates stacked everywhere from the every president in one of those kennel dog crates.
Yeah, every president in a mouse trap, stuck in a mouse trap.
That's funny. All right, well, we will continue the conversation, do some fun stuff in the XR. Thank you guys for watching, for listening. Thank you, everybody in the chats. We'll continue talking to you guys in the XR, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a fantastic rest of your day.